Hey, what's up, guys? It's your host, Lopez, and I just want to say thank you for tuning into this episode today. If you're on Facebook and want to show some support with a like on the page, you can find it by going to facebook.com/behindcloseddoorspodcast or just searching Behind Closed Doors Podcast. You can also find it on Twitter at the BCD Podcast and on Instagram at the Behind Closed Doors Podcast. Last but not least, follow the podcast on Spotify by searching Behind Closed Doors in the podcast section to see all the amazing upcoming interviews I have to come. Every Sunday, I post a picture of a band with a hint of who my next guest is. Then on Tuesday, I post a brief clip from our video interview with a good highlight of our conversation we had. And lastly, post the new episode up on Spotify every Thursday morning. Now, on to the episode. All right, we got Tommy Victor, the magical man behind it all, and the band Prong. How are you today, buddy?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Thank you. First and foremost, just want to say thank you for taking time talking with me today.
Hey, no problem.
So, jump right off the bat. Where'd you grow up at? Where are you originally from?
So, Flushing, Queens, in New York City.
Okay. Is that where you're living at currently?
No, and I'm in Los Angeles now.
LA now?
Well, yeah.
What brought you out that way?
Well, we made a record out here, and then I sort of stayed. I liked it. Back then, it was cheap. This is like in the 90s, and we were able to rehearse out here, like rent a house and work on another record. So it didn't really work out that great. But, I mean, initially, I really was attracted to the weather and the inexpense of the place. Eventually it was difficult for me to get the hell out of here though. So I sort of wound up staying. It was hard to go back to New York City, you know, it was tough. So,
yeah, I feel you 100%. I'm originally from Indiana, my wife and I, and we planned on moving to Alabama and, got down there. It was hotter than fuck. We did not like how hot it was. And it was just, you know, we didn't realize how much of swamp covers Alabama and those southern states down there, so we kind of just had to come on back up. Plus, we like having all four seasons of the year, and with winter down there, it's really non-existent with snow and whatnot. So,
kind of. You get snow in Indiana. I can tell a little Hoosier accent. Where are you from?
I am from I'm originally from Michigan City. It's where I was born and raised, but I live in a town called Wanata, Indiana. It's not that far off of. Trying to think of where Gary, Indiana is. A lot of people.
Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not that far from Chicago. I actually took my dad to O'Hare and Midway this morning. So I'm only about an hour away from there.
Okay. Gotcha.
Not that far. What else shows have you guys played out towards Indiana in this area?
Oh, man. I mean, a million times. I mean, we've been from Fort Wayne to, Indy, and I don't even remember. We played, South Bend a bunch of times.
No kidding.
So, I remember when I was at Gary used to be just like this horrible shithole years
still
ago.
Is.
Is it? Yeah, it was really bad.
Yeah. There used to be a house. I'm not sure if you know the guy from Ghost Adventures. God damn, I can't think of his name. Zach Bagans. He bought a house out there, some possessed house, I guess, where all the gang members used to take dead bodies to way back in the day. And I guess it was like utterly just crazy, demonic, possessed, and kids were walking up the wall backwards that lived there and like flipped off the walls, did all such crazy stuff. And he did a documentary on that house, and he said that things got too extreme, so they had to tear it down.
Right, I got you. Yeah, I mean, back in Brooklyn, I mean, my sister lives right around the corner from where Sammy the Bull would chop up his bodies. So, familiar with that. It's this place called the Gemini Lounge, and it's something else now, but If you wanna, I have a little baby, so I know you have a bunch
cool.
of kids.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, I was gonna say you're all cool. How old is your kids?
He's 7 months. I have an older daughter who's an adult, and I have this young baby son.
So. 7 months, dude. That's crazy. My daughter, she's gonna be turning 8 months here within.
Have a daughter 8 months?
Yeah. Yep. She's gonna be 8 months. We're not that far off. She's 7 months still. No. She's gonna be 8 months in about 2 weeks.
8 months and 2 weeks. This kid's gonna be 8 months and 2 weeks. Yeah, what's your daughter's birthday?
Her birthday is July 14th. Yeah, 14th.
That's what my son's birthday is.
Are you kidding? July 14th?
No, yeah.
Let me see.
You don't even remember your daughter? I know you have about a million kids because I've seen the pictures online. But here he is. But
Oh, my God. Yeah, dude. What's up, dude?
Tommy He's all happy. Yeah, they're about this. Is he starting to sit up on his own and everything now?
He's not sitting up on his own.
No, my daughter, she just started doing that not too long ago, and she's all ecstatic about it.
We're kind of pissed off that he hasn't crawled or he's not sitting up on his own yet, and he's laughing at me now. He's like, that's, and he's not really syllabizing anything. It's just like,
yeah. My daughter found out she's vocal and that she can scream, so she's always just all day, you know.
So yep. Your daughter's the 4th, same birthday with him. Weird.
That is, dude, we're going to have to get them together with a play date sometime.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Now, your oldest, you said she's an adult. My oldest is only 3. He's going to be 3 this year. So there's a little bit of an age gap there. But, yeah, the little
I don't even want to tell you how old my daughter is. No, my daughter is 27.
27. Yeah. A little bit of an age gap there, but.
Sure. She hated the idea because I got remarried. I like the idea of wife is a couple of years younger than me. So with the idea of having another child with somebody else, like with that young, she wasn't into it. But now she like loves my son. So like they're like, when she got to see the baby, she was cool about it.
Oh yeah,
so,
yeah. That's crazy. I'm 27 myself.
You're a kid. You're a baby. Yeah,
I am. Yeah. That's funny, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so I spent some time. I was in Indy for a while. I actually lived there briefly.
Oh, did you really? In Indianapolis?
Yeah, I hated it.
Yeah, I used to go to diesel school down there, and it sucked, so I had to drop out, and I went back up north. But
school? Was that with the railroad or something?
I was at Lincoln Tech, so I was, like, learning how to work on, like, semi-trucks and, like, diesel engines and all that good stuff.
Nice.
I didn't graduate out of it, but granted, I got to keep all my textbooks, so and all my tools from it. So, I mean, if I really wanted to get back into it, I drive semi-trucks for a living now. So it's I'd rather not work on them. It's one thing to drive them versus working on them. So it's
So during COVID, what happened with that job?
I was booming, dude. I was.
Oh, really? Nuts.
Yeah, because I was in refrigerated goods. So, like, I brought, all the time. Like, I used to go to Nestle, get like frozen pizza, stuff like that. Drumsticks, you know, the Nestle ice cream drumsticks, all sorts of stuff like that. To like, we had a deal lined up with like Tropicana, like the orange juice and all that. And it was just nonstop, constantly back and forth all week. I was only home 48 hours every week. So I was booming. We were booming.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's very good money crazy. Then. We got good money then. Yeah.
It was good at the time, but like the pay wasn't really that well. It was a starter company, so they tried to get me the lease. So right now I just do dump truck, and the people that I work for, it's family owned, and I couldn't ask for anything better. They're great people. So it's everything
That's
worked
good.
Out. Oh yeah.
What do you think eventually there's this politician by the name of Andrew Yang, and he keeps saying that the trucking industry is going to change. It's going to be all automated drivers. It's self-driving vehicles. So
I see
it's kind of a doomed industry, but you got a couple of years left, but
yeah. And that's like more of like a semi-truck retrospective. Like for me, I'm just a dump truck driver now. So like, like when you were going in Indy or Indianapolis and just those Southern Indiana states, do you recall seeing those big wind turbines that are like, they generate the power or whatnot? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We have them out here too. Yeah.
The company I'm with now, we have a contract lined up with a construction company called White Construction, and we're bringing out the stone for them to be able to access to those towers. So, we just found out actually, we finished up at 60% last fall, but 30% of it is in the wrong spot. So we have to take out 30% of it and put 30% back in. And that's not on our behalf. It's on the company. So we're getting some double money now on that. So works out for us. And we got the good end of it.
Good, good. Yeah, man.
So for you, you're a guitarist, yeah. You're a guitarist and you sing?
Yeah.
Okay. What got you wanting to pick up a guitar in the first place?
Well, actually, as a kid, I have older brothers and sisters, so it got turned on to music really early. And I have like two sisters, and then my two sisters were into anything from the Beatles to like Gordon Lightfoot and James Taylor and a lot of light rock, the Carpenters. Mm-hmm. And my father was a piano player, and he would play sort of like show tunes and just like all this cheese ball shit that I hated. And then my brother just tried to dabble in guitar, my older brother, and he turned me on to Cream, Vanilla Fudge, Jimi Hendrix. So they just blasted stuff to me. So I was like, I want to get in a band and I want to start. So the first thing I did was to pick up a bass. And like, I didn't even really know how to play. I heard somebody around the corner from me, this local musician, this kid who was a year older than me that I thought was like 30 years older than me. Back when, you know, when you're a kid, like a guy, somebody like is in seventh grade and you're in sixth grade and you think, oh my God, they're so much older.
Yeah.
And then I heard from a friend, a guy who lived around the corner from me. And he said that, oh, well, this dude's selling his bass. He's quitting this local band. It's this little band that these kids had. And I said, well, I'm interested. I want to play in a band. He's like, really? And he's like, I said, yeah. And the kid came back to me. He goes, yeah, he's selling it for $10. And, I said, sure. And I never forgot. I never spoke to this kid in my whole life. He came and knocked on my door and he just like held the bass out to me. And I said, $10. He goes, no, it's 12 now. And then I just said, sure. I went in and got another $2. And then I just sort of, it was this short scale height deluxe bass. And I just started figuring out Kiss songs. And that's how it started. It was like I played by ear, learned songs, you know, I quit Pop Warner football, quit Little League, and just started playing and became a freak, you know. So my mother's like, my son, all he does is play, he's listening to this music, this crappy music, and he's in his basement learning. Everyone hated me after that, but eventually I just had the bug, man. I just like found some older musicians, was playing in bands as a bass player for all my teenage years. And then I joined this punk band called The Fast when I was like 17, and I got out of high school and I went on tour. And then I'm going a little bit ahead of the question, but that's how I started, was through hearing The Doors again, and all these bands as a kid. And, then when, Kiss came out, I lost my mind over them.
How was the British Invasion for you? Like with Black Sabbath, The Who, and all that stuff.
Sabbath is still my favorite band. Yeah. When I first heard Paranoid, I didn't hear the first album first. I heard Paranoid. I mean, Iron Man, Paranoid, We're at War Pigs, I lost my mind. Like kids in the neighborhood were into them too. So, when Sabbath Buddy sat with Volume 4, Master, I got my first copy of Master Reality. Was another interesting story. It was like this, I was drawing on my book at school. I'm pretty old. So I was in seventh grade and I was writing like Black Sabbath on my book, like it's more scribbling, And some kid said, oh, Black Sabbath, you know who they are? I'm like, yeah, man. It's like, you don't know them? He's like, oh, I'm not into that. But like my brother, he was into them. But he has one of their records. He has it's a black one with a purple lettering on it. I'm like, really? Which one is that? He goes, dude, I'll just give it to you. I'm going to bring it into school because my brother never listens to it anymore. So he brought it into me. He gave me this copy of Masters of Reality. So I was just like, holy shit, I got this record for free. Then my brother had all these coins and he was like, I ain't rolling these. Like, you know, you had to roll up the coins and sort of like to trade them in to the bank to get cash out of it. And he's like, I don't know how he collected all these coins, but he had like this huge bag of quarters. And he goes, we'll go to Corvettes, which is this department store in Flushing. And he says, if you roll up to these quarters, I will buy you a record. And I said, cool, man. So I rolled up it took me like a day to roll all these quarters up, stick them into these paper things. And then he bought me, I got paranoid. So then I was up to date. And then volume four, this is what we did back in the day. I mean, I had no money when I was a kid. So this kid, his brother had volume four, and we took like a microphone from one of those little cassette recorders, and we recorded it from his speakers onto the cassette, and that was my copy of volume four forever. Like I had a little cassette player, and I would listen to it on this crappy recording on there. And I was like, until finally, I think somebody else gave me the album of volume four. When I started playing in bands, we would learn records, and like all my records were just shot. They were just scratched up because we like, oh, you're going to learn, you know, Sweet Leaf. So here, you take that record. And then I'd get like, you know, Zeppelin 4, and I'd have to learn like Black Dog. And then we trade these records around. And then this was before CDs or, you know, so we just have to keep. That's why kids play guitar so well in these days, is because they didn't have to go like, oh, here's that first part and take the stylus and put it there and then go back and forth and back and forth to learn off of records. Like, we didn't have digital technology or anything. There was no tabs. There was nothing. So it was just scratched up records each other. So, you know, that was
playing by ear.
Oh, that's how we learned. That's how we then, you know, then of course you get together with these guys and they, like, I remember I got into this band as a bass player. And we were like, I think it was like Walk This Way or some shit. And like, we got in the studio and he's like, he's playing Walk This Way. And I'm like, dude, that is not right. Like, that there's something. And he was like this, like, I don't give you a Latino dude. He was like this Latino guy. And I'm like, dude, there's something that's not right. That riff. And I go, I don't know what it is. And he's like, fuck you, motherfucker. And he takes his guitar off. And he's like, you want to fight this one? I'm like, no, dude. Like, I'm not going to fight you.
Right.
He didn't really, there was no way to check. He goes, prove it to me, man. Prove it that it's wrong. And I'm like, it just doesn't sound right. So I was like,
he took it so serious. Like, he called his mom a fucking idiot or something.
I know, exactly. He got all fucked. So I was like, I'm out of here, man. Like, I remember I grabbed my bass and I got the hell out of the studio. It's like there was no way of knowing if it was right or not. Like, we couldn't check
there
was no videos, there was no YouTube, there was no way of checking. Now these kids, like, I mean, the learning ways they learn shit is unbelievable. Like, the kids shred. So eventually I moved to guitar later on, you know, like, and so that was
bass.
Yes, I didn't played bass for years. Then I moved into Manhattan and I was a sound man at CBGB's I got a job there. But like, I went to, like you said, you went to trade school. I went to audio school and I didn't even finish, like you're saying about you. And then I wound up getting an internship. I had to get an internship and I wound up working sound at CBGB's in New York. And then my prong started out of there. So,
okay. What guitar do you play on now?
I got my own signature model by Schecter. It's a Tommy Victor signature model. So.
No kidding. That is awesome. How did that? Yeah. How'd you land with that?
Well, I've been with them for a long time, you know. So, you know, because I play guitar with Danzig too. So, like, I got a bunch of. They started. there's this one model that I liked a lot, and then they put like the Danzig logo inlays into it. And then eventually they said, well, why don't we make this into a signature model? So the signature model, you can go check it out at checktheguitars.com. And it has, the Prong logo, which is behind me in the 12 foot inlay. So now I've been with them for forever with Schecter. So they've been giving me guitars. I don't even know what to do with them. I got so many of them.
That's awesome. You're hoping that your boy will follow in your footsteps?
I don't know, man. Like, I think he probably will.
Yeah.
I wouldn't push it on him, you know. You know, if I could tell his music, like, I have an older brother, right? So, and he's to this day still trying to learn how to play guitar, and he just can't do it. It's like he can't, yeah, it's like it's one of those things, either you can or you can't. It's the weirdest, you know what I mean? Like, it's like hitting the baseball or something. Some guys, you can send people to all kinds of training and whatever, if you don't have the hand-eye coordination with guitar, you're not going to be able to do it. I mean, he still takes lessons, he buys all these guitars, he's got more expensive, greater guitars than I do. He still can't figure out how to play. I'm like, he goes, what do you think of this? I'm like, dude, like, you're kidding me, you can't. He's like, so if he picks up a guitar and doesn't know how to do it, then I'm like, dude, you just don't even bother. Like, just try stick to math. I'd rather him go into technology, or than music is I wouldn't advise. I mean, I've been a professional musician since I'm in my 20s, so, but like I would not advise anybody to take this route in life. So that's my advice to it. I mean, it's too many ups and downs, man. It's like, it's just
a pain. With COVID right now.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm lucky, like, one thing I could get advice people is what I've done my whole life as a musician. Even though I had some, I've gotten some big checks, and I never spent it or any of it. Like, I just saved every freaking penny that I could possibly have, so for a rainy day, because it's like I'm the cheapest, most frugal bastard that you could, and that's how I've been able to survive. Because if I went and spent my money, I would know what I'd be doing right now. I'd be humping out of on a FedEx truck,
right?
That's what I'd be doing. It's like I've been like a roadie, one of these dudes that we're in a band, and they didn't really make it. They wound up being either a crew guy and making more money than the actual guys in the band do eventually. I don't know what I'd be doing. I mean, I used to think that I maybe work at a record company, but they don't exist anymore. I mean,
yeah,
we were on a major label, and there was, at that point, there was, 7, 8 A&R guys, and like maybe 500 people working at Epic Records. And like at the main building, at the Sony Music building in New York. And now there's like 3 people that run the whole thing. It's like, the music business is shot. Like, what I mean? Like, it used to be this huge thing, and now it's gotten really small. I mean, a lot of that's digital technology. A lot of jobs are not needed any longer. And then, then people can make cheap records, like at home, and, it's proven. Recording studios are difficult to find, like a real recording studio anymore, Do you play? Are you a musician? Or
I play drums, yeah.
Okay, cool.
So, with going back to the whole guitar thing with your brother, it's definitely not for everybody. It's hand, feet movement, you got to be able to interpret the both at the same time with hi-hat and then a kick drum and then with your hands. And it's not easy, especially when you get into some serious, some serious licks with that.
Yeah, drums is you have to have a whole different side of your brain that's operating, because it is like, I can hold the beat a little bit and that's about it. Like, some dudes, like some guitar players, they'll get on a drum kit. And I'm like, what the hell, man? Like, how did you, like, I don't know. It's like, it's a natural thing, it's like, it's really natural.
So with Prong, how did you guys start?
Well, We formed out of CBGB, which, if you're not familiar, was a famous rock club in New York. And then the doorman, Mike Kirkland, and I realized that we had a lot of similarities in tastes and music, which really was, you know, Celtic Frost, Killing Joke, and then, like, you know, bands like Bauhaus, and also a lot of more experimental music, and then, you know, the a lot of real old heavy metal too. So we said we're going to form a band, and then it happened really fast. Like, I wasn't even playing at that time. I was working a soundboard, and I wanted to be a sound guy. And he's like, I heard you play. Like, you know, his girlfriend knew me from back in Queens and said, oh yeah, you know, Tommy plays. And I was like, I didn't announce it to anybody. I'm like, yeah, I play, you know, and I was playing bass. He's like, and he was a bass player. So we're like, well, we got two bass players. And then we got this guitar player that came down. I was like, this guy's not that good, man. Like, and he's like, well, why don't you, you know, like, give it a shot. And because we were writing songs, like, in our apartments on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. Like, you know, we get together, like, within a couple of weeks, I had a couple of ideas. And I sort of, like, took the guitar and I started playing them. And he's like, Mike, the bass player, and my partner at the time, he said, you play guitar. And I'm like, fine. And I don't know how I did it. Maybe it was just like, you know, back in those days, we had a lot of help with a lot of narcotics. So I was up all night freaking learning Metallica songs and Celtic Frost songs, trying to figure out how to play solos and stuff. And I did it. Like, I don't know how it happened, but, you know, within a very short amount of time, this guy was interested in putting out, we went in and recorded and put out a record, and it got on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And like just locally, we talk about how things have changed, just like in Manhattan at local stores, there was tons of, like, you know, punk rock shops, and this place Bleecker Bob's, it was a famous record store in the Village. And just within locally, we sold like 3,000 copies of our record, just like, you know, from vinyl, and only played like, you know, maybe 3 or 4 shows locally. And it just like blew up really fast. And so, like, by the time we know it, this guy in England found out about us, this guy, John Loder, who was working with, he brought the Beastie Boys over there to England, and was involved in this Discord label that had Minor Threat was on it. And he found out about it, and he goes, I'm going to license the record. So that record got licensed, and it just exploded in England. And we were on the cover of, like, you know, like these magazines, because, I mean, back then, I mean, crossover, hardcore, thrash, grindcore was something new, like, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, people weren't, it was something new, like, our first record was like this combination of thrash metal, hardcore, and it's called Primitive Origins, and like, it was just a combination of all this stuff. So over there, it got a lot of attention. Then we took a nosedive over in England. You're back in those days, you were a flash in the pan, and then everyone hated you. So eventually we put out another record, and then we got a major label deal with Epic. You know, we played a really big show opening up for the Cro-Mags in New York at the Ritz, and an A&R guy from Epic was there. I mean, classic story, and came back to the dressing room afterwards, like, hey, I want to sign you guys. And we're like, what? Like, fucking kidding me? And a major, this band on a major label? But it happened, you know, it happened. And we, you know, we put out 4 records on Epic, you know, so we lasted that long on a major label. So
that's good, though.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Now, for your guys' song, are you a Spotify guy or an iTunes guy?
Spotify,
perfect. Okay, so on Spotify, you guys have just shy of 200,000 monthly subscribers, and your number one song is Snap Your Fingers, Snap Your Neck, sitting at 11 million streams. What, in your opinion, makes that song so popular?
I mean, that was an instant magical song. I mean, I never forget the first time we played it live. It was before the record came out, and that's significant. I wish we had more opportunities to do that. where we were able to write songs on the road because we were constantly touring back then. I mean, that's on our third album release, Cleansing. So we had two records before that, and we were constantly touring. And like most of the ideas were put together on the road or whatever. And then we had maybe five songs that we were playing out live that were being churned out for the next album. And we were trying it in the audience. And right when we started playing that song, we were like, what? Like people right from the bat were just going nuts when we were playing it. And we're like, well, this is cool. And we went back home and we did a couple of demos. And it was just one of those songs that it was just a good song. And I remember writing it, and I don't remember, it took maybe 5 minutes to write that song. So it's just, like I say, like the music business and writing songs, it's like the luck of the draw. Like sometimes
you
get lucky, you know, you get something happens and it clicks, and you know, that's, and then of course, what helps on that is like, you know, Beavis and Butthead, we had a video and it's on Beavis and Butthead, made that song popular as well, because you could still YouTube it. We were on that with the video of that song was played a lot on MTV eventually.
That's awesome.
Back in the day when rock music was on MTV.
Yeah, before it was all bullshit.
Yeah, Headbangers Ball.
Yeah, God, I just got just the last glimpse of it, and I think most of that was just reruns when I got to see all that stuff. I didn't get to see the true, Hey, That's My MTV and the Headbangers Ball, you know.
Yeah, it was a big thing. I mean, everyone would wait on the weekend and say, oh, who's going to be on there? And it's like, we'd be sweating it out, like what bands are going to be up on there, and like where, you know, like it was such a big deal. And, you know, not only having that, and then the push from the, you know, from Beavis to Butthead, you know, it's gotten people's heads and like that song. And then, you know, it's the people, I don't know, the logarithmical playlists that are on Spotify, and how I heard that there are people that compile the playlists. I happen to know this, that, you know, there are people that are programmers that compile the playlists on Spotify. So, you know, they know, you know, the song, and
right.
We're lucky enough to have, you know, that's what, you know, it's like, it sounds like your parents would say to you, it's like, oh, you got to get lucky and just have one song. And, you know, that's how the music business is. There's a lot of truth to that. I mean,
yeah.
You know what I mean? It's, I wish we had more of those snap your fingers, snap your necks, but that didn't happen. But we tried. But it's like, then when you start trying to write songs that are popular, it never seemed to happen with us. It's like it just seemed to, that's, the song was just a magical experience for everybody.
Now, when you were on tours, what was a day in the life like for touring with you?
Well, I mean, we've gone through ups and downs with that. I mean, I made it sound like we were like this in England. Yeah, we were this huge thing for a while. And the rest of Europe, we had to build. And then, you know, in America was really slow until the MTV video happened. So we did, you know, the years of in the van, just playing to 10 people and just like horrible experiences, no money, you know, all the gear in the van with us, just, you know, trudging the road of happy destiny, just trying to do that. And, you know, it was, for the most part, if I look in my back, look at the accumulation of my career, it's been mostly shitty shows. Like it's been like, there's been some big epic events that I usually feel like, oh, I wasn't really that good that night.
Yeah.
And there's these are shows where I felt, man, we really slammed it, but there was only like 10 people there. So it's like, that's sort of like my personality too, you know, where I'm always thinking that like, it's never actually that great. Then, you know, I mean, back in the early days, we were so excited that we were just partying like freaking crazy. Like we were just going absolutely ballistically nuts every day, all day long. And, you know, that, I wouldn't advise that upon anybody, you know, like you, it's fun for a while. Some people can do it, but we couldn't, we couldn't handle it. Like we thought that was the thing to do. And, you know, we thought it was going to be a lot of fun, but there was always troubles. Like, you know, like there was always something stupid happening that we were winding up like bailing somebody out of jail or running from hotel police or something. It was like something ridiculous, like somebody smashing their hands or somebody, you know, getting beat up or arguing with other bands. There's just always something that Prong was experiencing. So, you know, band members fighting, crazy shit. I try to make, then, you know, I try to keep it clean for a while. And I was like, not completely straight edge, but I was not like doing anything. I was just smoking tons of cigarettes all the time for a while. And then my throat got all fucked up, my voice. But then we had a lot of problems with the other guys, like going, oh, Tommy's an asshole. He doesn't want to play, hang out with anybody. So eventually I started peer pressure and went back into just being a lunatic and crazy. And that happened. And, you know, but then when Prong broke up and I started the band again later on, I mean, we did a lot of struggles, like just playing a lot of crappy shows in the van, back to that, you know, years we had that experience in the tour bus and going that route. But I mean, that's why we owe the record label still to this day, like so much money because of tour support back then. It's like we have to get tour support to get the bus and get on these tours. And, you know, we had opening slots with Pantera, White Zombie, you know, Ozzy, you know, all these things that the label would give us money to go on these tours. And that's all recoupable funds. That's why I'd have to live three more lifetimes and sell, have five gold records to make up the money that they, you know, us that we didn't pay him back, you know? So it's like, that's how it was in the 90s. There was a lot of money thrown around and that was the record label was a bank. You know, you go to them for this, go to them for that. And you know, you're just, they put you on tour, you go on the road and you'd have tour support in order to pay for it. So a lot of these opening slots, they give you, you know, $500 a night, you know, like eventually when you go out and do your own tour, you're back in the van and like you're making what, $1,500 a night, you know, trying to live off of that. And, you know, it's tough. You gotta watch your money. That's why I've always scrimped and saved, you know, it's like in order to survive, you know, I, you know, it's like, no, I'm not spending money on this. No, I'm not spending money on that.
Right.
It's always been that way.
What is the craziest thing that you've seen on tour before? Whether it happened to you or is this something that you got to experience and see from a, you know? Well,
the craziest thing I've had was way earlier on. And it's the thing that's in my memory. There's probably been crazier things. I mean, obviously touring with Pantera was like that. Every night was something insane where, you know, like they'd be, you know, coming on your bus and throwing M80s at you or something.
Right.
Most dangerous shit that ever happens, you know. Well, I was like, you know, I was hanging out with Dimebag at this hotel and he's like, there was a wedding at the hotel, like a reception. And, you know, he's just like, you know, I hate these fucking people. And like there was sort of this balcony and he like got all this change and like rocks and stuff. And he was like pelting. It was like in this atrium, this wedding. He's like disrupting this wedding, throwing rocks at people. And then there was this other side reception hall. And he said, let's crash this wedding. And he went in there naked into this. It was like almost like Borat or something. Went in there, it's like, fuck. Fuckers, like these poor people are traumatized. The wedding thing, I was like, you know, hopefully I was like, dude, I'm too much of a Catholic boy. I'm like, I can't deal with that. Karma, you know, St. Peter is going to reject me from heaven or something. So, but the earliest thing that I can remember when I knew that we played this back in the day in New York, this place like Bayonne, New Jersey, and it was sort of like this real working class area. And we did it was like a little hardcore matinee, a show there that we did. I think it was with this band Blood Feast, and they played. I think they got through their set, but it was totally run by these mafia dudes. And like they, you know, it was sort of like this. They didn't know what they were getting into. They said, "Oh, we're going to put on shows in the back of this pizzeria in Bayonne," and they had this back room, and I thought that they. You know, they were going to have disco night there or something. And, you know, they were going to have, I don't know what these guys were thinking. They were hardcore. It's like four of these guys like, yeah, they were, who's the guy from Prong? Get over here. I want to talk to you. It's like, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what this is. I don't care what you guys do back there. It's just like, I just bought this disco ball. And if anything happens to that thing, there's going to be trouble. And it's like, and he goes, you see that? I think I just bought this thing for this room back there. I'm like, all right, man. It's like, I mean, I'm not in control of what goes on, but you know. And he's like, I don't care what happens. I don't care what you do, but these guys, you know, he has this big dude with like pinky ring. And he's like, you know,
and yeah.
It's like, so he goes, so we start, we get, so we finally get on this little stage and there's like 50 kids, just, you know, like some metalheads and some like, you know, some skinhead dudes. And like I play, it's like this disco room in the back and they have a little PA. Like I just play one chord and this kid gets up on somebody else's shoulders. And he's like, and he punches the disco ball and it goes flying. And like the guys, like these guys are sitting on this corner there. And he's like, that's it. That's the end of the show. And so it's like, we're going to fucking kill you, motherfuckers. These guys. So like, we're out of here. And he's like, you have to pay me $500 right now. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I was like, well, I gave him what money I had in my wallet. And then I think we had like an amp or something. I said, here, just take this. So he's like, those motherfuckers ever come back here again. Like, it's like, it was the craziest thing ever. Like this was really early, maybe our 10th show or something. So I'll never forget that. It was like, it was really, really insane. We didn't even play. And I wound up like losing an amp and like all my money.
Oh my God.
Story of my life when it comes to playing music. But yeah.
What was it like doing some work with the Misfits and working with Glenn? I mean, not the Mis, with Danzig and, you know, doing some stuff with Glenn Danzig and all that. How is he?
I've been playing with him since 1995.
Oh, year after I was born.
Wow. Okay. Well, I've been in and out of the band. I'm not on any of the good records. So, I mean, any Danzig fans? I mean, you know, there's later records, but let's face it, the first four Danzig records are the records, like with John Christ, those are the classic great records. So like, you know, after John quit, I came in, Prong got dropped from our label, and then Glenn called me up, like, you know, we've known each other for a while, and you know, Joey C, the drummer for Danzig at that time, knew me. So I was doing absolutely nothing. That's funny, you mentioned Indiana, here we go, synchronicity. It's like I spent some time in Indiana and I was out of the band was dropped. I came, went back to Indiana. I was with my daughter there. And I got a call right after Prong got dropped and I came back from Europe and I was sitting in Indiana going, what the fuck am I going to do with my life? And my ex mother-in-law was like, what are you going to do now? And I go, I guess I'm going to deliver pizzas or something. I don't know. Like, the next day I get a call and it's like, John Christ isn't in the band anymore. And this guy is, the guy that we had is not working out. We need you to come in. And we're going on the road with Ozzy at the first Ozfest on Wednesday.
Fuck.
This was a Saturday. He goes, can you learn all the songs? I said, yeah. So I didn't even have a car. And we were living outside in this place called Fishers, Indiana. It's like outside.
Yeah. Right?
And it was like the sticks back then. Like it was nothing.
Yeah.
So I was like, I got an offer to do another gig. I had one guitar there and with Danzig. And I go, I don't have any of the records. So I took a bicycle and rode the bike to Castleton Mall, bought all the Danzig records, came back and learned them the next day, and then was on a plane Monday to do one rehearsal, and then was the Wednesday, we went on the road, and Thursday was the first Ozfest.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was insane. So that I've been with them, you know, in and out, and then I got fired a couple of times, and you know, Glenn's always been really cool to me. Like, you know, he's always been, I've been lucky with him. Like he's always taken a liking to me and always gives me the benefit of the doubt. And I don't know, it's just one of those relationships where it's like, you know, we've always, you know, we've had a little bit of things here and there. Sometimes I don't agree with some of the stuff, you know, like anybody,
yeah,
but it's been a blast. I mean, like, you know, I always liked, you know, from Sam Hain, Misfits, so I've liked all the Danzig and you know, Misfits material. I wish I was involved in the Misfits. I mean, they had, you know, AC wound up getting the gig to play a second guitar. Glenn wanted me to do it, but Jerry didn't want a guy from Danzig playing, you know, the side guitar on it. I mean, I would have loved to play in the Misfits stuff. I mean, we had Doyle on stage with us on a couple of Danzig tours, and you know, we did like a Misfit set in there, mm-hmm. and that was a blast. And then I did the Legacy Sam Hain tour where I did all three sets. I did Misfits, Sam Hain, and the Danzig set. I was on stage for like 4 hours just there the whole time, you know, learning, but like, you know, learning Sam Hain was a blast, you know, like, so it's always been good playing, you know, playing with Glenn, you know, it's always been cool. He's gotten pissed off at me a couple of times and like fired me, but you know, he's got me back.
Yeah. So that's good that you guys always worked it out in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, like you said about Corbin, we had a whole bunch of shit planned this year. Like, you know, he came out with this Danzig Sings Elvis record that I played on, and we were gonna do small shows with that. And he had a whole bunch lined up, but that got canceled. And then there was two Danzig tours, and then there was a prom tour in South America that got canceled. So yeah, I mean, I had a lot. This year was supposed to be really active. I mean, it's crazy having child born at the same time. I don't know how that would have worked out, but you know, now it's like my wife's working at home and I'm taking care of the child. So you know, everything works out somehow in weird ways at the end, but you know, it's been a weird, crazy ride. But I think Glenn will do a couple more things this year, and that we hope maybe there's this Psycho Vegas festival that's still planning to do that in August. So I think that, you know, we're supposed to play the Holy Lucifuge record from start to finish. So that's supposed to still happen, but, and it looks like, you know, with the vaccinations that may happen, I don't know, but we'll see.
Yeah. Cause I seen there's a couple tours that are getting planned out right now, and not really sure how they're going to go about, like, with social distancing and, you know, all that good stuff. If you're going to have to wear a mask, you know, nobody's going to want to wear a mask when they're in the crowd. It just won't happen, especially that metal shows and whatnot. But were you part of the Misfits reunion tour that they played at Riot Fest a couple years ago?
No. I mean, like, any of those that's been with Doyle and then,
okay.
You know, like, that's, I, you know, it was, I wish I was. I mean, the Misfits, the original Misfits with Jerry and Doyle, and then they had AC playing the guitar with Doyle and then Lombardo. But I would have loved to have been part of that. I mean, it's like, you know, I went to see that tour. They played, it's amazing how huge it was. I mean, they played Southern California Stadium, which is a soccer stadium for the the LAFC, this brand new stadium in LA. It's like, I don't know, 25,000 people. And they played that a year and a half ago, and it was just like sold out and just crazy. 25,000 people. Then I saw them at the Garden too. And you know, that show was pretty phenomenal too. So, I mean, even if I'm not involved, I'll go, because I'm a, you know, pretty big Misfits fan.
Oh yeah. Now, one more question before we wrap this up. What's one major conflict or failure that you faced while being a musician, and how did you overcome that?
One major one. There's a couple of them. I think there's certain periods where, like, I've given up too quickly, where, you know, I didn't show any perseverance in some areas. Like for instance, like, we have this Rude Awakening record, and I got frustrated on the mix of that. Like, you know, when we're doing the mix of the record, which I mean, we had, I didn't like the way it was coming out, and I let everyone talk me out of being there. So I walked out on the session. Like, you know, I just sort of said, I should have stayed there and fought things out more. And like, sometimes I'm uncompromising, but then I don't see it all the way through. So, you know, not everything is going to be groovy all the time. You just you got to show up and stay there. The same thing with the band, when we've had conflicts and I felt like, you know, I had to make a change or, you know, like, you know, things like that. I haven't really stuck to my guns here and there. So that's one of my shortcomings.
When you're touring with Pantera, did you take any block tooth grins?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, like, initially I didn't. And, but I've known Dime. I knew Dime way longer than most people. And I'm not saying that, you know, out of trying to get any kudos for that, but I've known him for a real, like, before Cowboys from Hell came out. So, like, I think we partied before then. And then when we wind up going out on tour, like, I was trying, like I was mentioned earlier, I was trying to be like straight edge for a while, because it was just this circus on the road, and somebody tried to keep it together. And eventually I was just like, you know what, fuck this, I'm going to start drinking again, you know? So that's what happened with that. Yeah, no, I mean, I'll tell you a little, originally they were with Seagram's 7. And then they moved to Crown. That was the thing. We're moving to Crown now. So that was one of the original Black Tooth was with a Seagram 7 whiskey.
And then they moved it to Crown.
Yeah, that was a major decision.
That's funny. Well, Tommy, I do appreciate you taking the time talking with me today. Is there anything you want to say to anybody that's listening? Are you working on anything currently?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying. I may put out another record, but, you know, like, check out, like, I'm glad you mentioned Spotify. I mean, we have all our multitude of prom albums. There's, like, somewhat in the rain. There's 12 albums and 15 releases, and then there's a couple of them aren't on there for whatever reason. So three of our albums are not on Spotify. So but go on there and check it out, and, you know, the whole catalog. And then you go to prongmusic.com is our website. And I mean, look me up on Facebook. If any questions, check me out. That's how you got in touch with me. So
yeah, absolutely.
Every once in a while, I'll go on there and, you know, talk to people.
Sounds good, man. Yeah, we'll definitely have to catch up, and I'll shoot over my number whenever we do get it over that way.
Oh, yeah, the kids,
we have to get them together. That's absolutely so crazy, isn't it?
I know, isn't it? And you're like, wait, and you're like, July? Yeah, let me check. July 14th, it's the weirdest thing. Synchronicity, man.
Yeah, they're going to have to be buds growing up. I mean, you know, the same birthday, and they're both got some killer dads, so why not?
Yeah, man. Cool, bro.
All right, man. I'll stay in touch, buddy.
Thanks, buddy. Okay, man. Have a good day.